So, my dear, the day you have always dreamed of has arrived. The day you become Bride of Chaotica!
Hello, and welcome to the Brides of Chaotica, a chaotic Star Trek podcast. My name is Taylor, a bona fide Trekkie. And my co-host Elizabeth is not present for this episode today because we're going to do a special bonus episode. Some of you might be new because this is a bonus episode. Some of you might be regular listeners, in which case, either way, welcome. Today's episode is a bonus episode where I will be solo interviewing Carolyn McCormick, who starred as the character of Minuet in Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 15, 11001001. I don't know if there's a better, more proper way to say that title, so you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. I am lucky enough to have a connection to Lenny McCormick, and she was gracious and so kind enough to be a part of this episode today. So we mostly just talk about acting and, you know, her acting career up until the point that she did Star Trek, what that experience was like. Yeah, it's the first time for me to actually interview someone. Usually we just do the recap, and it's weird and chaotic. So please excuse my awkward vibes. I had questions written down, but then in the moment, I was like, I don't know, we kind of covered everything that I had, I swear to God, within the first, like, 10 minutes, so then the rest was me trying to stretch it to make an actual episode length. But Lenny was wonderful, she was so kind, wonderful to chat with about things that I hadn't chatted with her about before. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoy, excuse my awkward interviewer self. See, I don't even know the proper terminology. Because as I said, it's not something that I've done before, but I don't know. If I get an opportunity in the future to interview someone else, I would love that. Maybe I'll work on it. But without further ado, here is my interview with Lenny McCormick. Let's just jump right in. So this is normally like a recap podcast where we go over an episode that we just watched. So this interview style is going to be a little new and different for me.
Okay.
So I hope I don't mess up, but I think it'll be fine. So I'm going to ask you the question that I ask everybody at the top of my podcast, because the podcast was born out of me being a Star Trek fan with no Star Trek fans around me. And I took someone to a Star Trek convention in Vegas who had never seen a single episode before, just because I didn't want to go alone. So
did they think you were nuts?
What?
They think you were nuts?
They didn't. They actually had a really good time.
It's fun.
It is fun.
It's like a costume party.
Exactly. I gave them the rundown so they weren't totally shocked by what they might see. But I had never been to one either, so it was new for both of us. Because I've only been a fan of the franchise for a few years. Because I didn't really watch it growing up. But so my co-host has never seen an episode, and I just kind of show her random episodes and then we talk about it. So something that I always ask is prior knowledge of Star Trek before, I guess, your first exposure to it, like big exposure. Cause growing up, I didn't really have any other than like the Big Bang Theory. And I was like, I'm never going to be into this ever. And then the pandemic happened and here we are.
I got it because, at the time we're talking, I don't know, when I did Minuet, it was probably 35 years ago,
yeah, maybe 85 or 86, I think.
Okay. So 40 years ago almost. So I was in Los Angeles and my soon to be husband was doing Richard III in Minneapolis. And he was a huge Star Trek fan of the original series.
Oh, really?
So I knew that he watched all the time, and he didn't watch a lot of TV. He's a big Shakespeare actor. So I always thought it was so interesting that he loved Star Trek. It didn't seem to match with his sort of classical training. So when I got offered this episode, I didn't know anything about Star Trek other than that my boyfriend, now husband of 40 some years, was a Star Trek fan. So I was like, yeah, because I wanted to impress him.
Right. Oh my God.
That's really what made me excited about doing it. And it was the first season. So Patrick and Jonathan were very nervous about whether it was going to be a hit, and they had no idea if it was going to land because nothing had even aired yet. So they were really fun and eager. So we had a blast, the three of us.
Yeah.
And
there are only two people that you are really interacting with throughout the whole.
Yeah. I don't really interact with anyone else.
Yeah.
So we just hung out, the three of us, and had a blast. And when I had to speak French in the episode, and I used to know how to speak French much better than I do now, but I was quite fluent at that time. And I remember helping Patrick. He was like, tell me, how do I say this? Because his name is Jean-Luc. And I'm like, you're a Frenchman, Jean-Luc. But anyway, we had a good time.
That's so fun. Yeah, I just watched the episode right before this to like refresh my memory because it's been a while. And I was going to ask if you knew French because I forgot that you spoke French during the show.
Yeah. And then they brought me back like a year later and I had just finished playing St. Joan. Mm-hmm. So I had cut off my hair and I was up in Seattle doing Much Ado About Nothing. Mm-hmm. And they flew me down to do this one episode where I'm like a dream sequence for Riker who thinks we're married. And when they saw me with really short hair, I think they were a little shocked, but
really
nothing they could do.
I think the short hair looks good.
But they liked that big hair on Minuet.
Yeah. Did you not? You don't like the big hair?
I did not. I felt like I had a helmet on.
Oh, no.
But it, you know, I was young enough not to ever complain.
Yeah.
You just did what they told you.
Where were you at in your career when you got Star Trek?
I'd already done a TV series called Spencer for Hire. And I had come back from that in Boston. I'd been in Boston for a year. And I had done a film called Enemy Mine, another sci-fi, with Dennis Quaid and Lou Gossett in Germany. So I had kind of two big jobs under my belt. And I had another movie with Jimmy Stewart and Carol Burnett that I was my first job. But that got canned midway through because Carol Burnett had a nervous breakdown. Sad. She got ill. So she was sick. It was a bad time in her life. But that would have been my first big break, but it never happened.
Right.
So I had a few things kind of under my belt. But in terms of television at that point, it had been, I think I had done a few pilots and then I had done Spencer for Hire as a regular.
This is a little bit off topic, but how much Shakespeare have you done just in general? I'm just curious because I love Shakespeare and I want to do that in my career. And I'm just curious.
Gosh, I've done probably 10 of his plays. I'd have to look at my website. Oh, it's probably not on there because much of it. No, it should be on. I know it's probably not. My resume does it. A lot of things you have to bump off as you put other stuff on. But I'd say probably 10. Love's Labor, Much Ado, As You Like It, 12th Night, Comedy of Errors. I don't know, I'd have to look at the list. That's too big a question, but probably about 10. I love Shakespeare.
Do you remember the audition process? Because I know currently, because there's so much Star Trek like being created, it's so under wraps. Like some people don't even know that they're auditioning for Star Trek when they get the audition.
Yeah.
But do you remember what that process was like since it was the beginning of the next generation? It was the start of like the new generation.
Well, it was back in the day when you met in person. I remember going in and meeting all the people, all the producers, all the mucky mucks were there. I do remember driving home and getting home, and there were no cell phones then. That's how long ago this was. I got home and my agent was calling me saying, you need to get a beeper because they wanted you to come right back and I couldn't get a hold of you. So I thought, oh, well, I'm already home. Do they still want me to go back? And they said, he said, no, but get a beeper. So I remember thinking I should get a beeper. But that's, again, how long ago this was.
Mm-hmm.
We had beepers if you needed to be. And then you'd pull over to a cell phone.
Right.
And I mean, not a cell phone, a payphone.
Yeah, a payphone.
And you put in your money and you would call your agent and say, why are you calling me? Or why do I, you know, crazy. So that's what I remember the most is like, oh God, do I need to get a beeper? Yuck, I don't want to get a beeper. I remember that more than the audition. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm probably not going to get the job now because they couldn't get a hold of me to come back, but then they gave me the job.
Right.
That's all I remember. And the red dress that I'm wearing is my red dress.
Right. I remember you saying that. And then
and I gave it to someone. I give my clothes away all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who I gave it to. But I gave it to someone. I think it was Peggy Maltby. Peggy Maltby, if you hear me out there. Where's that red dress?
The dress. Because, yeah, like, I imagine that a lot of people, like, wear that dress at, like, conventions and stuff. Because Minuet's an iconic character.
No, people come up to my desk, my table, and they have the red dress on. They have the hair. It's usually a big old wig. They mm-hmm. have the little rhinestone necklace. They have the bow pin. The bow pin was mine, too. And it's not like they didn't have money to buy costumes. I think I brought that dress in
mm-hmm.
And they liked it. I don't really remember the details. So, I just know I gave it away.
Right. And did they, because there were several like minuets throughout the episode. Was it the same dress or did they like make?
No, they didn't. I always wore my dress. They just made mock-ups.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
But sometimes I get fan mail mm-hmm. and it's a picture of the wrong minuet. Not me. It's one of the ones that he rejects.
Oh, that's
they're all gorgeous funny. Women. So right. there's no reason they should be rejected, but I never sign them because I'm like, sorry, this isn't me. I don't know who this is.
That's so funny. Yeah, because there's like four throughout the episode, I think.
He comes into that bar, the holodeck, and he mm-hmm. he looks around and he kind of goes, no, no, no. It flashes on, and then it gets to me at the actual bar.
Yeah.
Sitting there.
You show up when he says, more sultry, I think was the language what? That he used. And you
pop so the funny. Bar. I never think of myself as particularly sultry, but
no.
Anyway, he picked me.
That's hilarious that people send you, not you.
Yeah, I get those all the time.
That's so
and I don't ever know what to do because I'm like, I can't sign this. That would be
right. That's so like awkward.
Plagiarism or just to say, good luck. This isn't me. Or I don't ever know what to do. I right. just throw the picture
do you
out.
Have like a set of photos.
I do have a set of photos because I have some that are from Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring you one next time I see you. I have some from the convention, you know, because you have pictures on your desk, on your table.
Yeah.
So I have some of those. It's always the same one, really, with the glass of wine and the enormous hair.
Mm-hmm. At the bar?
At the bar.
Yeah. It's like the shot of, like, this is the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have those. I have a few different ones. I'll let you pick.
Okay. Speaking of conventions, what has your convention experience been like?
It's fun, you know. It's always stunning how knowledgeable all the people there are. More knowledgeable than me about every episode and everything that, you know, they've done and
mm-hmm.
who you're... I mean, they just know so much. And for me, it was 40 years ago, so I'm less familiar.
Right.
I don't watch it to today. So mm-hmm. I'm always sort of stunned and I'm always amazed at the costumes and especially there's some people that dress up as Spock and they look just like Leonard Nimoy. I mean, it's stunning, right. The detail and just the joy people have. I was next to Riker
mm-hmm.
at my last convention between Riker and Data. Mm-hmm. And people were so excited to see them and they would wait in line and I don't know. It's such an easy way to give people pleasure.
Yeah.
So I think it's great.
Yes.
It's great that they do it. And I think it's nice. And people love that franchise.
Yes.
So I say celebrate it. If like there's no reason to do anything but.
Yeah. I didn't It's so funny. I didn't watch Star Trek, and then all of a sudden during the pandemic, it was like the only thing I watched. Because it felt so cozy and hopeful. Like that's my
And
favorite thing.
a
There's
safe
hope.
planet elsewhere.
God, I wish. Especially now.
Yeah, exactly.
Please, especially now. It wasn't my comfort show before.
Yeah.
It definitely is now. Which conventions have you been to? Have you been to the one in Las Vegas?
I do Vegas. The only two, I've only been to two or three, and they're all Vegas.
My favorite.
Yeah, huge. And it's just great people watching.
Yes.
It's just fascinating. I just sat at my table, like watching people go by and just an entire different world. So it's so fun to just observe.
It is.
And then, people get so excited that you are there and you'll sign a picture or, talk to some really interesting people. So it's fun.
Oh yeah, especially during the I went to one during the pan or not during the pandemic, during the writer's strike
Ah.
and the SAG strike, and that was really interesting because nobody was allowed to talk about Star Trek because it was one of the
Yes, yeah, it's owned by SAG. Yeah.
So nobody was allowed to talk about it. So I got to talk to all these actors just about acting.
Yeah, that's
It
great.
was right when I was about to go into school and I was like, what's your advice? Because I hadn't acted in like 8 years or something. And that was so fun
That's great.
to just get to talk to them about the craft.
Yeah.
Speaking of the craft, I'm getting good at segues. How did you craft a character that was a sentient hologram?
I just thought about the idea of being able to do or say speak in any language, have complete control over everything, but have no emotions. I remember thinking this woman would have no, she's just there. And it's sort of like in Blade Runner, that character that, what's the character's name? She's a robot, but you don't realize it till the very end of the movie.
I don't know. I haven't seen Blade Runner.
There's a great character in that. Harrison Ford sort of falls in love with her, but you realize that she's actually a robot. But so I kind of had that image in my, I'm trying to think of the actress's name, I'm totally blanking. But that image was in my head of someone who has a calm about them because they are in total control of their emotions and their intellect leads.
Interesting. I didn't even think about that. The emotional aspect or lack thereof, I suppose.
Yeah, she doesn't have any. She just goes along. You want to dance? I will dance. You want to speak French? We'll speak French. You want to, there's no fear or passion. It's just present. So it's, you don't want to play it like a robot. But Sean, someone, that's her name in Blade Runner. Sean, well. But yeah, that would be who I kind of based it on. If I had to, I mean, I didn't consciously, but I've seen Blade Runner many times since then because my husband loves that show. So I've seen it. So I realized, oh, wow, that's kind of like a minuet character. Sean Young, that's her name. She played the character of Rachel.
I'll have to look that up because I've never seen that before.
That's a great movie. They did a remake of it. The original with Harrison Ford, it's great. The remake's good too, but the original's fabulous.
I was thinking about like what you talk about, which is past. And when I was watching the episode, I was like, how do you go about crafting a character that doesn't have a past, only a present?
Yeah. Well, I talk about the past in acting terms. If you're doing a story about when your dog got run over, you don't bring that up and do a nostalgic story about it usually. You bring it up because it's pertinent to the moment right then. It has to do with this has to do with this moment. This past moment led to this moment versus going back into some sort of dreamy, I was standing on the curb and a truck came around the corner, that sort of dreamy quality that I don't think people usually tell stories from the past with that aspect in mind. Because the story comes up because someone, you might say something about your dog, and I would then go, oh, yeah, my dog, that same thing happened to me. And but it's forward moving, not backward. If you ask like your grandfather, tell me about the war. Tell me about, you know, when you met mom. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go dreamy. It goes specific and something funny or odd or unexpected.
Right, because there's a present purpose.
Yeah. You're wanting to know about such and such.
Yeah.
Or when was your first heartbreak? They're not going to get all dreamy and sad about their first love that ditched them.
Right.
They're going to talk to you about how you'll get over it without diminishing your pain in the moment.
Right.
But completely, you know, talk about, yeah, I remember I was howling under their window at night, so sad, and they wouldn't open their window. And, you know, it's funny in when you look back on it, but at the time when you're out there howling, mm-hmm. not funny. But in telling the story in the present, it's funny. Because you see the ludicrousness of your pain in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. again, not to diminish it, because it's very painful.
But the pain is different than the present.
Yes.
And what you're trying to do with it.
Yeah.
With the story.
And you're usually telling the story to the person who's in the pain to help move them out of it.
Right.
Not to bring them back to yours. Unless you're mean.
Just the worst.
She just want that person to suffer.
Oh, God. I definitely know people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I definitely.
They're out there.
Definitely do. Oh, yes. Sometimes you're related to them. Oh, here's a good question. I meant to ask this first, but then the thing with this podcast is it goes in circles all the time. That's kind of the point. What are your least favorite questions you get asked in an interview?
How do you learn all those lines?
Well, I won't ask that because I know how.
What's your work process? Like, how do you create a character? I don't really like talking. It's not like there's a formula.
Mm-hmm.
Each character, different things feed it. And as you get older, you've got different experiences that help you understand characters in a different way. Like, you can play a part in your 30s and then play it again in your 40s, and you'll have a totally different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a Shakespeare part or a play that's really complex, because your life experience is so different.
Right.
And I don't really like to talk about personal, my family, or mm-hmm. I feel like they shouldn't be exposed.
Right.
So I don't really get into that kind of stuff. The more gossipy things don't interest me. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, who did you really dislike on the set? Or what was so-and-so like? I always don't like those questions.
Right.
Because you're just, I don't want to incriminate anyone. Even if I didn't like them, I wouldn't say anything.
Well, yeah, you want to keep it like professional.
Yeah.
The job.
And it's no one's business, really.
Yeah. Let me look and see.
Were you about to ask me how do I learn all those lines?
No, of course not. That is the worst question to ask ever. I think that's a funny question because it's literally like the job. I don't know. It's just.
No, it's what I always say about you ask an ice hockey player if he knows how to skate. Right?
It's like a baseline, like this is part of the job.
Yeah, it's like, I want to play on your team, and then you start falling off your skates. The coach would be like, hey, I just assumed you could skate.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Like, and it's like, prep for it. If you struggle with learning Shakespeare, like me, then you prep for it, and you start learning Shakespeare sooner. Like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, some people have to practice, it takes longer to learn for all kinds of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah.
Just like if you were learning to skate, some people are naturals and some people have to really train. So
mm-hmm.
same with learning lines.
Let's see. I don't have any more questions, actually. This is a lot faster than I thought it would be.
So do your people ever write in and ask questions?
No. We've had a couple listener emails, but it's mostly information.
Right.
Because my co-host and I, Elizabeth, are so new to Star Trek that we'll get kind of, not corrections, but like throughout an episode, we may be like, I don't know why this happens. If you know, let us know. And so we get some of those sometimes where they're like, well, Spock is like this because of this. And I'm like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, that's what you learn at the convention. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, really? So why did da-da-da? They'll give you all the information you need. It's mm-hmm. fascinating.
It is. And it's so fun because I feel like I know a lot about it just because I did a deep dive during the pandemic. But then it's like people will talk to me like in line at the convention and they're like so excited and tell me like so many more things.
Well, and it's like, have you ever watched Stephen Colbert and he talks about Lord of the Rings? Mm-hmm. He knows everything about Lord of the Rings.
Right.
You know, and that's what the people of Star Trek, it's impressive. The depth of their knowledge.
And it's all like, it's so technical.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me because I'm not like a science person.
Right. But it's also so imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
It's science with imagination, which is kind of how science comes about because you have to imagine what if.
Right. Which is so many like inventions and things that came out of Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. Like, I can make that.
Yeah.
It's so crazy and really cool.
Yeah, it's great.
I can't actually say the title of the episode that you're in.
Okay.
Just numbers.
It's just numbers.
It's like 11001.
It's something. A whole bunch of numbers.
I forgot. It's like binary code.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember.
I don't like watching myself. Have you watched the episode?
Yes, I have. I actually watched it before I went to the first convention because mm-hmm. I realized I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I thought, oh, I better brush up on what did I actually do or say? Or so I watched it. And again, I got preoccupied with how big my hair was.
It is pretty big hair.
It's big.
It is pretty.
So, but yeah, I watched it and it was fun.
Yeah. I was looking at pictures of Minuet today because I do fan art sometimes on the episode in like a Art Nouveau, like 1950s kind of style. But your character is really easy to do that for because that's kind of already the vibe. Okay. But yeah, I was noticing the hair.
Yeah.
I will say.
Yeah.
So look forward to that, I guess.
Well, thank you for inviting me onto your podcast, Taylor.
Of course. Thank you for popping on. It's a little, I checked our follower count. We have 200 followers. But probably 15 of those actually listen. We're a little baby podcast, so I appreciate your time a lot.
I'm happy to do it.
Thank you for joining us on my very first interview episode. I know that ended really abruptly. Lenny and I stayed on the chat to just talk about some stuff. So I just wanted to exit that out because it was just like personal stuff. But thank you guys for joining us on this journey of Taylor tries to do a interview based, not chaotic episode. I hope I did a good job. I hope everybody has a happy, happy holiday. I'm trying to sort out with Elizabeth to get in contact with scheduling a new episode. Sorry, my editing room Taylor is a little sick, so we're doing our best to push through. But we're trying to schedule recording time before the next semester for both of us starts. And we hope that you guys have a happy holiday season, whatever that looks like for you, whether it's cold, snowy, warm weather, like enjoy yourselves. And we hope that you enjoyed this little episode featuring Carolyn McCormick. And if you want to find us, you can email us at bridesofchaotica@gmail.com. And if you want to follow us on Instagram, if you haven't already, you can find us at Brides of Chaotica Pod. So have a happy holiday season, and we will see you soon.
Somehow I feel comfortable here.
Lady's gonna join the chat, and I'm really nervous because I've never done an interview before. No sneeze.